Good morning. This is Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. At Right Choice Services, we develop individualized programs to help clients find that book inside of them they have always wanted to write. And I'm your host, Tim Morrison. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the writing they engage in as a part of their work. My co-host and producer for Right Here, Right Now is Kevin Finn. Kevin wears many hats at Business Radio X, isn't that right?
That is correct. I do a bunch of different things here. That's right.
And you get paid for it, too.
I actually get paid for it, believe it or not. It's not just the free candy and free water. So,
hey, I listened to the show live last week that you did with Vanessa. You guys are quite a team.
I know. We've actually been working together longer than we have, so I do her other show.
Well, I was worried that I might not have a chair to come back to after I listened to you guys. So, but it is good to be back in the studio today. I challenge today's guest to come prepared to discuss return on investment. Regardless of our business or profession, we all want to maximize our return on investment. What can we do to enhance ROI? And what might be missing in our day-to-day activities that keep us from increasing that ROI? And are there other elements to improving return on investments than just branding and more effective advertising and marketing? And what impact can social media have on return on investment? This is probably the most business-oriented introduction I've given in the whole 17 months of the show.
From every show I've heard, it's definitely.
Yeah. Well, there's a reason. I always have my reasons. You know, I believe our listeners are in for an intriguing discussion, as we always have on Right Here, Right Now. My two guests represent radically different professions. Tiana Letakoski is a principal with, okay, I should have asked this, is it AIDEA?
IDEA Digital.
IDEA. Okay, IDEA Digital, a boutique marketing strategy, consulting, focused online marketing strategy. And Pamela J. Gottfried is more properly addressed as Rabbi Pamela, and she's a member of the CLAL's Rabbis Without Borders Fellowship. Now, I believe we all have a sense of how to discuss return on investment in the corporate world, and Tiana's company works with business and industries to help them improve their ROI through marketing. But what is Rabbi Pamela going to tell us, and how do religious groups and 501c3 groups discuss return on investment? We're going to begin with the traditional perspective. Tiana, welcome.
Thank you for having me on the show, Dr. Tim. It's a pleasure, and it's a pleasure to meet Pamela and Ken.
Kevin.
Great. Kevin.
All right. Tell us about your digital company. How did it come to be, and what do you do with it?
Well, I'm very passionate about what I do. Marketing strategy is something that I love, and I love also to grow my clients' businesses. So 3 years ago, I started focusing. My background is corporate, and I have been doing heavily branding and marketing strategy. But digital strategy is something that most of businesses are focusing on now, because it's online, it's 24/7, and it's reaching globally, it's reaching in all demographics via different platforms.
Could you explain for the uneducated, and I'm raising my hand here, digital marketing?
Well, digital marketing, it's everything what's happening online. It okay. starts with your website, which is a focus of your business, and which probably most of your clients or anybody else's clients will start their contact with you. Mm-hmm. Because it is like what your business represents. And also, like now we have social media, which mm-hmm. is a very impactful way to connect and engage with the clients, which we didn't have before. Then we have email marketing. Email marketing is, again, you know, like when customers sign for the contact with you, it's a very valuable relationship to cherish and continue. We have so many ways to connect now. People, there is radio, there is TV, there is internet, you know, like so. I focus on internet portion in my business.
How do you determine what a company needs?
Well, I do first assessment, you know, like, and I see, you know, like where their clients are mm-hmm. and what is the best platform to connect. And as I said, it always starts with the website. Website is your front online. And after I define, you know, like what my client needs, we see also what are the other best platforms to integrate to. Mm-hmm. So for some of my clients, for example, in entertainment industry, Facebook or Tumblr, social platforms work wonderfully for more traditional LinkedIn, it's a wonderful platform. So because there are so many options now, mm-hmm. it's always very important to be where your customers are. And I'm very passionate about growing my clients' business. So after I assess and see where their market share is, you know, like where the clients are, then I focus on those areas and is develop the strategy.
Is there a common thread? Do you find I start with this company and it doesn't matter what company I start with, I'm going to find this mistake?
No, I think every business is unique. You know, like I work with nonprofits and for profits, mm-hmm. and it's very different strategy. For with nonprofits, it's a lot about fundraising. It's a also budgets are much more limited. You know, like so you mm-hmm. got to focus more maybe on social media, which is really cost effective, or email marketing. But with of course, like for profit companies and business corporations, there is a lot of advertising and different approaches. And you try to see what really fits the budget dollars the best. And why I love digital marketing is that we have analytics.
Mm-hmm.
We can really measure all the interactions. We can measure, like, website visitors, what they are interested at. And based on those data, I create strategic decisions. So it's very helpful for me. That's why I love digital, because I really can focus on the interest and deliver solutions which really matter to my clients' clients.
How did you get into this? How did you develop this passion?
I'm actually an engineer. I have a master's in biochemical engineering. And then, But from the beginning of my career, I started doing marketing. And mm-hmm. here I went to Harvard and Kellogg for business marketing strategy. And I was sent to U.S. To establish Finnish company operations. So I did all marketing entry. I did all product entry, all branding for U.S. We went from 0 to 2 million in a year to 5 million in 5 years.
Wow.
So it was very...
She's good, don't you think?
She's very good. I'm impressed.
Thank you. I love what I do. I truly do. But to me, this life, it's all about people. Mm-hmm. And people do business with people. So for me, it's always important to address customer need. I mean, I try to market with the benefits. No, mm-hmm. not with features, because I really believe we are all in a business, you know, to give some benefit, you know, like in my clients are in a business to give benefit to their clients.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very passionate about that I really have this benefits-driven marketing. And after a while, you know, like it's really creating meaningful relationship, generating more sales, and so on.
Do you ever get questioned about what's a ChemE doing in this business?
That is a good question. That is
well, I raise it because I have no degrees in writing or journalism or anything at all. And look at me. Here I am having written 6 books. I've got a company that helps people write books. And when I have the chance to ask other people that question, I do.
It's an interesting question. I guess all it fits together because of my engineering background, I'm very analytical.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very ROI driven. So I measure because this is about ROI. So for example, when I have done for a client email marketing campaign, we created 4 times more leads. So I measured, you know, like with the traditional marketing, what we did and what we did with email marketing. I created, you know, 4 times more demand, mm-hmm. which ended up in a $300,000 sales.
That's what we call ROI, isn't it?
Yeah.
You did that so well. That's great.
I love numbers. So for me, so when you ask where engineering thing uh-huh. comes in, it comes really in my analytical and business side. But marketing, it's also about connections. Like you really want to connect with your targeted mm-hmm. audience. So there is a strategic part, which I love. So, and there is also creative part. So I think a combination of analytics, strategy, and creative to connect.
Mm-hmm.
And that
mm-hmm.
is something very important to me.
Sounds like you created your dream job.
Yes, I love what I do. I really do.
Is it your company?
Yes, it's my company.
I figured as such, but I wanted to give you that opportunity to say to the world, yes, it's my company.
Yeah, IDEA Digital, it's my company, and I really love to grow my clients' business.
Mm-hmm. You're not native, are you?
No, I'm not. How did you guess?
How many languages do you speak?
I'm fluent in 4, and I speak conversationally 1 more, so 5.
Wow. Again.
Yeah, I'm Tim speechless. Bedazzle us a little bit more. What languages are they?
Well, I'm speaking English, mm-hmm. Finnish, Serbo-Croatian, and French, and a little bit Italian and Spanish. So there is like actually six.
So you have all the romance languages down there.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I forgot that. That takes me back to my days of taking Latin, and I understand what romance is, but not when I learned Latin. I thought, ooh, this is not going to sound fine.
Half my family's French, and I can't even speak French that well.
Wow. Question I want to raise with you, and I'm sure you're very much aware of this. I am being besieged constantly by people who are guaranteeing me top spot or top five spots on Google if I just give them my business and my money. I won't ask if you do that. What's your reaction to that? I'll tell you my reaction is somebody's lying to me because they can't all do it.
There is, I mean, of course, budget issue. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's also how much you invest, you know, like because for search engine marketing and pay-per-click, you know, like you really need to invest certain amount of dollars to be more competitive in a search engine optimization. But I think where your writing comes actually very handy because Google is constantly changing their algorithms. So writing, it's very critical that good content actually ranks much higher with the keywords, search words, you know. So it's very critical to have a good writer. So I optimized for one client website. Mm-hmm. So it included, you know, like very strategic call to action, you know, like enhancement. It included like user experience, but also writing. And mm-hmm. we doubled the website visitors within 1 month.
Is that right?
That is right.
Oh, my. That's impressive. Mm-hmm. You do that with all of your clients eventually? I'm not saying you double it, but what I am saying is you look at the website, you critique it and probably rewrite it?
Usually what we do, we change also look and feel because mm-hmm. Many websites are done just by web developers, which are very, very talented people, but they don't have a business background or marketing background. Mm-hmm. So there is where my expertise comes really handy because I'm looking at it always from strategic point. I'm looking at how to connect and how to drive ROI. Mm-hmm. So usually I first change look and feel, put lots of call to action. You would be surprised sometimes you cannot even find contact us form very easily. Mm-hmm. And after I do that, you know, like the second most important thing, it's actually content. So it's very important to have a well-written website mm-hmm. because that is ultimately what will drive traffic to the website mm-hmm. and it will give the value and information and calls to action to connect with any business.
What I like about what you just said, other than the fact it brings up a nightmare to me, I had invested sizable money to get my website redesigned and it was done by a design specialist. Mm-hmm. And then I sat down and talked with a friend of mine who's a marketer, and she said, "What's this?" I said, "It's a lot of money is mm-hmm. what it is." And she said, "It looks nice." And then I heard what she wasn't saying. How do you handle that with your clients?
You know, I said, you know, like I have also a business background. I mean, mm-hmm. I started U.S. operations, so I can relate very well with a small business. And mm-hmm. I know, you know, like how actually difficult it is to build up clientele. And not just that, we not want to like build our new audiences and new mm-hmm. clientele. We want to retain existing customers. So this is like two-way street, you know, like, and we got to really have a strategy how to do both segments. So when people make websites, what they focus, you know, okay, I have a website, it looks pretty, but many of them actually don't have call to actions. You know, they don't have share media. You know, like now we're living in social media. Why not make it easy? You know, like make all these share bars, you know, like have contact us on every page. I mean, there is so many ways, you know, like, and strategically you need to have at least 2-3 call for action to connect on every single page. And many people don't. Because, you know, people don't want to navigate, and marketing is 30-second thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you don't figure out by 30 seconds, you lose their attention span.
Well, that's like when I teach people how to prepare their networking speech, and I say, you've got 30 seconds, and you don't have any do-overs.
Yeah.
And it's that leaves the impression.
Yes.
Go ahead.
And make as little clicks as possible to achieve something. Because mm-hmm. if you need to search for something so much, you know, again, the coherent way to put it, the coherent way to write it, mm-hmm. it's very critical.
Efficiency. I love it. I really love what you're saying. I love companies, and it sounds like you've done this. You've minimized the risk. You have a formula. You have analytics. and you've maximized your ROI. And I think a lot of people I hear, we see business people come in daily, and they're talking about how you have to take big risks to be successful. And I disagree, especially with small companies, that you want to minimize your risk and you want to maximize your ROI. And it sounds like you've done exactly that. It's awesome.
But you got to be very strategic and look at long term.
Very.
And this is what I love to do. Strategic, you know, like assessment, and also to develop and implement strategy. So my clients are not just getting strategy. I have also a team that we can develop and implement, or I can work with their team. So there is this beauty of flexibility. So.
Do you have a sense of how much people get back in terms of they invest with you to jack things up for them and then the returns start coming in? Are you comfortable with the knowledge of all, you know, people get four times their investment, they get an increase of three times on investment?
Well, I can give you, I have some numbers. For example, when I worked like in a corporate, I reduced marketing budget for 19% by switching to digital marketing. Because we were traditionally driven and doing, you know, direct marketing, and just by switching to digital marketing, we cut the marketing budget for 19%.
Okay.
And that was a really significant savings, you know.
That's huge.
Yes.
And you increased their responses.
Oh, four times the response rate. Sales guys loved it, you know, because we can target, you know, time is limited. They mm-hmm. don't have endless time to make so much calls or visits, you know. So when we created, you know, like the email marketing, we mm-hmm. can focus to the clients that are really interested in our business, and we can, you know, like focus on those, you know, like to drive sales.
What's it like working with nonprofits? Because you mentioned that, and they really have a limited budget.
I really love it. It was a very different experience. I worked with arts and entertainment, and it is my passion. It is also, I believe, you know, like working for corporations, it gives me different kind of fun and mm-hmm. happiness, but working with nonprofit is another thing. I like because of limited dollars, you got to be very creative.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be really, really creative and to use them to the maximum. So digital marketing is the best solution. I mean, have a great website, you know, mm-hmm. create email marketing, do the social media correctly, not just create it, you know, like in post here and there. You got to be very strategic, have a time to do that, engage audiences. Lifetime of a tweet or a Facebook post is 3 hours. I mean, you got to count on that. If you post something, it doesn't necessarily mean that everybody has seen it. And then I look at analytics and also the time when you post, you know, like everything, it's combined. So I really like, you know, like working with nonprofits because it focuses most on digital, mm-hmm. which is my, again, happy space.
I like that. Going to put you on the spot. You got anything for?
Not really. I just, the thing that I love so much is efficiency. I'm a big inefficient. Mm-hmm. It sounds like that you carry that to every single job and just make things more efficient. I think that's what's missing with a lot of companies, a lot of business. There's a lot of wasted money.
And well, I would agree. And that's what's striking me as well, Tiana, is that, you know, if you listen to my lead in that at Right Choice Services, we provide individualized programs for each of our clients. And do we have templates? Could, but I like to listen and see what they need, and then I'll develop the program for them. And that's what you say you do, and I really like that. So
thank
let's
you,
hope
Dr.
we've
Kim.
Done a lot for you here. I know we have, but people want to be in contact with you. They want to have their return on investment skyrocket, their costs go down. How do they get in touch with you?
The best number to reach me is 404-808-2569, or please go to my website. It is ideadigital.com, and it's spelled like AIDEADIGATAL.com.
It's like in English it would be AIDEADIGITAL.com.
That's correct.
But AIDEA is one word.
Yes, and the reason, just to explain, IDEA, it's idea in Japanese.
Uh-huh.
So I wanted something, again, which is great for search engine. It's a unique name
mm-hmm.
because with idea, you're going to get so much searches and your ranking will be bad.
Oh, you're
so
good.
So I wanted something creative, something that you can resonate, but it will come up, like if you search by, you know, like a idea,
mm-hmm.
like my company will come on the top. So.
Do you remember before we started, you were all nervous?
Yes. I love this.
We've been on, I've had you on Focus for 17 minutes. Can you believe that? Are you willing to let me go talk to Pamela now?
Yes, please, and thank you. It has been a pleasure.
Well, stick around. We're going to come back in a bit. Pamela, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Tim. And Kevin, it's great to meet you.
I'm having fun. Are you having fun yet?
Yeah, I've learned a lot, and I think I might be your next client.
Great. I'll be glad.
You're making all kinds of notes there. What should I be saying, CLACs or CLAC? Talk to me about that.
Sure.
And Rabbis Without Borders.
The word is CLAL. It started out as the Center for Leadership and Learning. It's a North American not-for-profit.
Uh-huh.
But CLAL also means the general public or a collective. So mm-hmm. CLAL is a trans-denominational or non-denominational Jewish group. It brings together Reform, Reconstructionist, Conservative, Orthodox, Renewal, all across the spectrum, and that's what Rabbis Without Borders is.
Mm-hmm.
It's a group, a fellowship of rabbis. I spoke to our founding faculty member, and we're almost 120 rabbis in North America. One of the gentlemen from my cohort, last year I was in the third cohort mm-hmm. of fellows, is actually in Jamaica.
Oh, my.
And, yeah, Mon.
Well, what strikes me about that is that if I recall correctly, you listed five different expressions of Judaism,
mm-hmm.
and you've got 120 of you all that are willing to talk.
Yes.
There are 250 branches of Protestantism, and most of them won't talk
right.
to each other, so this is really impressive. What do you all do?
So the year of the fellowship, now I'm a member of the alumni, and we have alumni retreats every year, so I'm mm-hmm. looking forward to that. It's Super Bowl weekend.
Oh, my.
So we're going to watch the Super Bowl together and or, you know, sit and talk and compare notes.
Hopefully you're watching the Atlanta Falcons play.
Ooh. Here's Ooh. To hoping, although I'm a New Yorker at heart. So.
All right.
We get together during the year of the fellowship, four times during the year, for extended kind of conferences.
Mm-hmm.
And each meeting has a theme. One of our second conference last year was on the intersection of Torah, Jewish wisdom, and technology and social media. So they take rabbis from all over North America. It's a juried, you know, you have to mm-hmm. apply. There were 90 applicants, I think, this year, or over 100 applicants for 18 spaces.
Oh, my.
CLAL's mission is to grow a group of 500 rabbis within 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is, and then we have study sessions. So before the High Holy Days, one of the faculty members led a webinar about forgiveness, and he actually spoke a lot about the Penn State scandal
mm.
and how we could incorporate that into our High Holy Day messages.
Now, do you have a synagogue?
No, I don't. I'm actually a freelance rabbi. I do a lot of adult education
mm-hmm.
Through the JCC, the Jewish Community Center mm-hmm. here, and other groups. I'm on the circuit right now with my book. I'm doing a lot of church groups. I do a lot of interfaith work. So I'm meeting the senior adult learners at St. Thomas Aquinas.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be at St. David's Episcopal later in the year.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
That's exciting, though, isn't it?
I enjoy that. Part of what was great for me with Rabbis Without Borders is as a freelance or non-pulpit colleague, mm-hmm. I had the floor. I had the foundation
mm-hmm.
for what kind of work I wanted to be doing as a rabbi and teacher and scholar
mm-hmm.
and author. But I didn't have the scaffolding. I didn't have the network and the fellowship.
Mm-hmm.
And so getting together with those colleagues, and we have a Facebook group. We have a Google group. We keep in touch. We promote each other's work.
You've got some digital marketing going, right?
We do. We learned about that last year.
We learned about that 15 minutes
yes.
ago.
So yeah. that's that gives me a net and uh-huh. a network. If I want to go do a scholar in residence gig, you know, and I want to visit my in-laws in Michigan, I have rabbis in Detroit who are part of this fellowship, and I can call and say, "How can you help me
mm-hmm.
Negotiate a visit to Michigan?" And that's really
the
work
nice.
That I'm doing.
Well, what you get to do is you get to do the good stuff and don't have to go to committee meetings, right?
Exactly.
Oh, those of us who know these things. Well, you've referred to your book. Let's talk about Found in Translation, Common Words of Uncommon Wisdom.
Mm. Well, the book actually started as a professional writing. I know you're interested in what kind of writing mm-hmm. we do in our professions. I was an incidental writer. and a classroom teacher and rabbi in a Jewish day school for 14 years. The mm-hmm. first 15 years of my rabbinate, I was a rabbi slash teacher. So I did a lot of writing, curriculum writing, lesson plans, monthly bulletin articles, some sermons for mm-hmm. weekend gigs.
Mm-hmm.
But it the Weber School...
Weekend gigs.
Weekend gigs.
That's not one term I've used, but I like it.
Or High Holy Day gigs. Mm-hmm. That's a time mm-hmm. of year where we work. It's very nice that that season has passed.
Mm-hmm.
It's good
mm-hmm.
to be in mid-October.
Yeah.
So the book Found in Translation began because at the Weber School here in mm-hmm. Sandy Springs, where I was working, there are many non-Jewish teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And the non-Jewish teachers didn't know the in lingo. And when we moved into the building over at the corner of Abernathy and Roswell, we were, what I would say, being a New Yorker and speaking Yiddish with my dad, we were schlepping boxes in
yes,
and out of
were.
Restaurants. So in the introduction to the book, I talk about how we were schlepping boxes and this nice guidance counselor who's a good friend of mine now turned to me and said, "Is that a Yiddish word?" And I said, "You don't know schlep?"
Everybody knows schlep,
everybody
right?
knows schlep. So it became a weekly email, kind of professional development mm-hmm. Project that I worked on for 2 years at the Weber School. And when I decided to take a sabbatical and leave the classroom, I took my top 40 of my weekly emails and developed them into fuller word essays, and they became the book.
And that's a great way to create a book, isn't it?
Yeah, it was great.
And are we well on our way for number two?
Working on it. For me, the hardest part is the marketing proposal and technical writing, all those things that Tiana was talking about.
There's going to be a conversation here, I know.
Yes,
yeah,
off air.
Definitely.
I am working on it. It's hard to find writing time. I have three kids at home still. So when they're at school, I try to do my writing, but I'm also managing two blogs mm-hmm. and writing for a third interfaith journal blog once a month. And so sometimes you have to remind yourself which is the primary writing and which is the secondary writing.
I get paid for this, right?
Right.
I understand that. But you have a vast storehouse of potential books there.
I do. I have. It was interesting when you said we try to find the book inside of them. Mm-hmm. I didn't know I had a book inside of me when I was in the classroom. I was, as I said, an incidental writer. And in the last 4 years, I've tried to become a much more intentional writer
mm-hmm.
and figure out what those books are. Last spring, I got off on a tangent, which I've really enjoyed, which is writing short stories.
Oh, my.
For story contests. Uh-huh. So I was a finalist in one contest, and I'm entering a bunch more.
Mm-hmm.
There are a number that the deadlines are coming up in November, and I'm hoping... Yeah, you know, it's a personal narrative. Mm-hmm. Usually I take a little incident that happened to me, just like the essays in the book,
mm-hmm.
and then I exaggerate it a little bit and
embellish.
Yes.
You become creative is
yes,
what you do.
Yes, I take that little nugget and I grow it into something.
Well, I think that's a point that bears expanding upon, excuse me, in our writing, because when my sister wrote or read my book, Letters to My Sons, she called me and asked me about whose parents I was talking about. And I said, ours. And she said, not the ones I knew. And I said, but this is my take. This mm-hmm. is my perspective.
Right.
And we do have that. So, yeah, we can say we get creative. But really, it comes down to how we view the world and our experiences.
Mm-hmm. What I learned the most, I think, from the faculty at Rabbis Without Borders is they challenged us to describe what is your Torah, what is your wisdom, what is the lens that you personally use to tell your story and the biblical stories and the Jewish story.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that's essentially yours, your Torah, and who is it for?
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been working in my writing on that. I blog a lot about parenting because I'm in it right
yeah.
now. and I blog a lot about interfaith work and sometimes about religious topics and mm-hmm. sometimes not. I find I blog a lot about being the other or recognizing the other in someone mm-hmm. else and
okay.
bridging that gap. Because that's where I am, and that's my wisdom that I can use the text, the biblical text and the rabbinic text to create a story, a narrative that I think is accessible to other people.
I want to take it back a little bit. You were talking about technology, social media with religion, which I think is really important, and I want to know how you're using that to really connect with the youth, because that's one thing I think is really lost in this generation. I see it all the time. I've got my 16-year-old cousin. He lives with me right now. And I just see they're tied into that. They're always on social media, but they're missing that religious aspect that I grew up around and has been so important in my life. And I just don't see that this generation is missing out, or a lot of different people are behind the curve in transitioning to the social media to help with that. So is that what you guys are doing with it? Or
I haven't been working with youth since I left the classroom. Specifically, I've been focusing more on adults. And I've actually been working on the other end, my dad and my mother-in-law in that generation, the 70-plus young seniors who are resisting being on the social media. But what I've tried to do is find how to use the social media, the tools, Facebook and Twitter, because the kids are on it. I haven't figured out Pinterest yet. But how to use that to get my message out, to get whatever wisdom I want to teach out. One of the things that's a struggle is the attention span. I think of those 16-year-olds, they don't want to necessarily sit and read a 500-word blog post about the Bible.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, not so much. But I am working, my second book project is actually a co-authored book with my daughter who's turning 14. I was homeschooling her. We studied the book of Genesis together, and now we had a mother. And it's funny that you mentioned that. She didn't want to sit. We used to sit in Borders and study back in the day. And then when she turned 13, I think, she said, "It's so not cool. I'm not sitting with you at Starbucks or Borders anymore. I'm going to send you emails from down the hall, from her bedroom to my office. And we'll study that way."
I love
it. And that's sort of the meat and the skeleton of the next book.
Oh, so, I like that.
That's great. That's great to hear.
So if you can use the, you know, I said to her, that's called distance learning, but we use the technology to facilitate, to foster that conversation.
Well, I think that's great just from a parental view that you're adapting to your kid's new view of technology. Instead of resisting, I see a lot of parents resist and say, "No, we're going to do this or that." You're like, "Okay, I'm going to take this, and we're going to adapt." I love it.
Thank you.
Well, what I see in that is the theme that we've been talking about, the return on investment, because you invested that time with your daughter when it was still okay. She was able then to find a way for you to continue to have that relationship in an acceptable fashion through emails in the same house.
Yeah.
Is that a safe statement?
It's a great statement. I had to think a long time about return on investment. The investment in the work that I do is always in the people and the relationships, and it's hard sometimes to quantify what the return is on that. Like in teaching and parenting, you don't get the return until 20 years later when they have kids of their own.
Yeah. So. But what I see is the return, and again, I'll go back to, I spent 25 years in ministry, is to see the relationships that develop, to see the change in attitude that people may carry, to see how they begin to approach things in a more open, coherent fashion, or to have that hunger for learning. I think even the fact that this book found in translation, I think, is a great example of what happens when you're willing to invest who you are in the lives of other people.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's been what I've been trying to reframe, what ROI means for me and my business, which is really just myself.
and being a representative of the divine, of God. How was this received, your weekly essays received in the Weber School?
It was great. I describe a little bit in the book, in the introduction, about how over time, some of the teachers, and we had Israeli teachers, we had a Spanish teacher who was, you know, from Latin America, so we had people from many different cultures in the faculty. They would come to me and they would say, "What does this word mean?" Or do Jewish people say, somebody sneezed in the faculty room and another person turned, and she was actually a Protestant and from here in Georgia, and she said, "Did you say God bless you?" And so that became a discussion, and then it became an essay that week. And they really loved it. It became something we talked about over lunch. And it was a learning experience, not just for the faculty who were receiving the email, but really for me, because I started looking around my work environment for subject matter for my writing. And I think part of being a writer is noticing things that are going on around you and then capitalizing them and embellishing them.
Well, that's the whole idea. I'm drawing a blank on one of the authors that I thoroughly enjoy, but in her coaching on writing, she says that that's exactly what the role of the writer is. We see the world in ways that others really don't see it. And it is our task to bring that viewpoint to the people.
Mm-hmm. And for me, I mean, I'm old school. I'm in my mid-40s. And it
you're
was
so young.
I had to learn to, when I stopped teaching, I made a website. And I consulted the IT guy. You know, the computer science teacher from Weber was incredibly helpful, my former colleague. And I said, I don't know what to do. You know, I've never done this stuff before. And it was wonderful because those relationships that we built up in this project over 2 years, that was another ROI.
There you
that
go.
Later got me online and into the world of 2004.
And you broke out of what could have been your background, because how often do we hear in churches and synagogues, we've never done it that way before? And you went beyond it.
I completely agree. It's just I like breaking out, innovating, and just changing the norm. And I think we need to do that with every aspect, especially in our country and everything. So it's just
you get us grounded. You're the youngest one in this room.
I am. I always joke with my friends because I'm one of my oldest friends. I only have about by like a couple months that I'm an old man. But
well, I want to I want to plug your book a little bit more, Pamela, simply because, as I shared with you before we went on air, my sister passed away last week, and I needed something to read that would ground me and just help me through the stuff that was going on. And that's when I really sat down and began to read this, and it just spoke to me on all kinds of levels. The ideas that you have, the humor, the family, the this and the that, and it reminded me time and again of my sister's and my different perspective. We were there at the same event, but you would never know it if you heard us tell our stories differently.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad that it helped you through that time.
And I think it'll speak to a lot of people. So if folks want to get a copy of that book, what should they do?
Well, it's kind of all over the place. Amazon, there's an ebook version on iTunes. But the best way, if you want a signed copy, a personalized copy, is to visit my website. It's www.PamelaGottfried. I have to spell it G-O-T-T like in Tim. F like in Frank, R-I-E-D like in David.com.
Great. And you just told us how people can contact you, because they can do that through that, don't they?
Yes. And I'm going to go home and put a contact us link on every single page of my website. That
there
was something
you go.
I learned from
there
Tiana this morning.
Well, that's a great segue into, you guys got questions for each other, things you want to shoot back at me. It's your turn.
Great. Well, first of all, I want to thank Kevin and Tim and Pamela. This was a very interesting conversation, and I would be more than glad to help, you know. And this is actually incredibly good experience.
It is. It's different than what you anticipated,
yes.
Isn't it? Thank you for that. That's what we try to do here.
Yes. I really enjoyed it. I haven't been on the radio since I was in college.
Well, that was so just yesterday, right?
Yes. A short while ago. I had some questions. I mean, I don't want to get into the nuts and bolts, but for Tiana, was talking about analytics. So that's something that I'm just learning about. And I know that my website, I think it's really good. I worked a lot, not only on the design. I had a design guy, a Georgia Tech student who has now moved on to bigger and better things. But I know that it's not optimized for search engines. And that's something I want to, because I watched the analytics for a long time. I thought that only my mom was reading my blog. So my analytics are good, and I post to the blog the same time every week, and I actually have a phone alarm set in my smart bossy phone so that I post to LinkedIn and all the social media sites at the same time every day and several times a day. But I know that there are still weaknesses. So what do you recommend for boosting analytics?
Okay. I love this question. As you can see, like, you can't, but I'm really smiling. So I'm really glad that you are have some analytics, because are you using Google Analytics?
Yes.
I would recommend that, because it's free and it gives really great insight into your website. And it's very good that you're following what's happening and to see your focal points. And you should also look where you lose the visitors. You know, like there is also the visitor flow. I really recommend that, because you can see how you can better maybe connect or change those pages. Or, you know, like, I mean, there is a patterns of behavior. When you say that you're posting it all on the same time, I actually don't recommend it. Mm-hmm. Because I'm following some people like on Twitter, Facebook, and this and that. And when I'm getting it all at the same time, you're actually losing this, what I was telling you, 3 hours. Because if you put it like on Twitter, just put it in a few hours, you know, like on LinkedIn and so on. So I'm thinking that you're having more variety. And if people are following you in more platforms, you're going to have more impact. The other...
I just want to clarify, I don't post all at once to LinkedIn, Twitter. I have different alarms set
so
that I'm posting at different times every day on different platforms. And then I use Hootsuite.
Yes. That I wanted to ask you. Then you can automate it. Mm-hmm. But then you got to be very aware. For example, Facebook really posts more images. Mm-hmm. So like those will come much more prominently. And now you have even a feature that you can promote posts for a fee. Right. And so, I mean, it's all the budget, you know, like, and what do you want to achieve and so on. But I think it's very good that you're not doing it at the same time. Mm-hmm. So there is, I mean, of course, a lot of things, but analytics, as you said, it's very, very crucial because we can get a lot of information mm-hmm. about the behavior and what interests them and to give your audiences the things which interest them. So
that's great.
Have you considered, Tiana, writing a book about what you know and what you do?
I was just about to ask that.
How
was thinking
that
for
a question?
That's a very good question. Thank you. I mean, I haven't, but, you know, it's definitely intriguing proposal. So I think writing is more like solitary thing. And I for me, this life, it's all about people. So I like the interaction with mm-hmm. my clients. I love, you know, bringing them benefits and so on. But sharing the knowledge mm-hmm. for the book, it's mm-hmm. excellent way to do it.
Exactly.
It's a great comment that you brought up because I went from being with other people's children every day for 8 hours to this very solitary life of writing. And I thought it was going to be a difficult transition. And it turned out I really enjoy the solitary. But you have to figure out how to balance that with your other work.
Yes. But that's why you're a writer and that's why I'm in marketing.
Yeah, and somehow or other you were an engineer at one point, which meant that you had to sit at a desk and really... I went to an engineering school in the liberal arts division of the engineering school, and so all of my fraternity brothers were nerds. Actually, they thought I was the one, but that's rigorous education. And then you studied at Harvard.
Yes, I went for business marketing strategy, executive education.
When I went for my doctorate, I got to take a couple of courses at the Harvard Graduate Business School, and that was an experience.
Yes.
It was a good experience. Again, I was the odd person out, but I had a delightful time with it. Mm-hmm. Kevin, I'll give you a chance to shout out anything.
I love seeing a successful businesswoman because I was raised by my stepmom and my mom. I always like to just give a shout out and just to you guys. It's so awesome just to see that. I know it's tough out there. I watched my mother's struggle and just wanted to say I want to know any hardships that you guys might have had in that area, if any.
It's a great question. One of the things working for an institution and being in the classroom with other people's teenagers, whom I loved, made me, as a friend of mine said, ugly with my own kids when I got home at the end of the day. So part of leaving the classroom was to enable and becoming a freelance, you know, launching my own career, mid-career, a new career, was to have time with my own children. And so it really is. It's I wouldn't call it a hardship. I call it a juggling act. And I often will send my husband an email during the day and say, hey, throw another ball in the air. I've got it. I've got them all up. You know, or plates, you know, juggling plates. But it was to create that space to be home for them at the end of the day and be a better rabbi, parent, author. So it's not a hardship, but it's sometimes a challenge.
That's awesome. I love to hear that. Tiana?
Thank you, Kevin, for your kind words. I think for me it becomes that I so much love what I do. And, I mean, it is a juggling act. That's exactly what you said, like being, you know, business owner. I have also a team that I mentor, so I really want them to grow in what they love, you know, like and so on. So sometimes I wish, actually, that I have more hours in a day, that I can do everything what I want to do. But it brought me so much happiness that I'm very fulfilled by, you know, like doing what I love to do, digital marketing strategy, and helping my clients grow.
I just love that. That's so great, Tim.
Yeah, I like that too. Excuse me. I want to give a bit of wisdom or insight to our listeners that how do we get on a radio show like this? I don't know if Tiana remembers, but her journey to this show began 2 years ago when you went to a networking event where Business Radio X was doing a remote, and I was given the shift for a while to interview whoever came along, and you were standing across from me while I was interviewing, and I got done, and I just walked over and asked you a question, and the rest is history. I kept the card, and I said, now's the time, and here she is.
Thank you for that. I remember, and yeah. I appreciate this opportunity.
Sure. Well, the clock is on us. And I welcome your comments and suggestions about content and about our guests. If you would like to recommend a guest or be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, let us know. Send us an email, and that would be at whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. Or, gee, show up at a remote broadcast and talk to the person who's doing the interviewing. Thank you, Kevin, for co-hosting and keeping me on track and for sharing your insights all along the way.
No problem. It's always a pleasure when you bring in great guests like this. It makes
Isn't
a very
great?
Intriguing
yeah.
show.
Thanks. Thank you. And Tiana Leitakowski and Rabbi Pamela J. Gottfried, I'm glad you came in. Tiana, what's your contact information again?
It is my website. It's the best way to reach. It's IDEA Digital. And it's spelled like aideadigital.com.
Great. And Pamela, your contact information.
Is my name, PamelaGottfried.com. That's G-O-T-T like in Tim, F like in Frank, R-I-E-D like in David.
Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. You can learn more about Right Choice Services and how we help individuals write the book they've always wanted to write at www.write, that's spelled W-R-I-T-E, choiceservices.com. I hope you'll join us next week and tell your friends about the show. In fact, send them an email right now and invite them to listen live or to our downloads. Right Here, Right Now, broadcast live every Tuesday morning, 10 o'clock Eastern Time. That would be 7 o'clock Pacific Time, and there are people who do that. And you can find us at righterightnow.businessradiox.com. And the MP3 version is available later today. I am Tim Morrison. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business right here, right now.